So far, this cassette has raised a number of issues about CCTV. Its use in crime control, its use in the criminal courts, its use by private companies, how far its use should be regulated, and how much impact CCTV can be expected to make on the broad issue of the problem of crime. We talked to Richard Sparks of the Department of Criminology at the University of Kiel about the benefits and dangers. Richard, can we reasonably expect CCTV to have any impact on levels of crime? Can we have it expected to have any impact on providing security for our lives?
Well, this is a difficult one, isn't it? I think we've already heard some recognition from all those who have spoken that we've got to break down a little what we mean by the notion of crime here, as any student of D315 will already be well aware. What I think this debate is really about, so far, concerns certain kinds of public order problems which take place in public space. Thefts, criminal damage, routine public order problems, perhaps car crime in particular. And clearly those are offences which concern people a great deal. But another interesting facet of this is also concerns how, what model, if you like, we use to explain those events. It seems to me that there's a fairly clear tie between the idea that CCTV can be especially useful in addressing those questions and an implicit explanation of why they take place, what's broadly known these days as a rational choice model of offending. So that really the connection that's being addressed, and I think Andrew Pudafat put this point rather well, is a connection to a situational idea of criminal opportunity and reducing criminal opportunity rather than any broader understanding of causes of crime as they might formerly have been understood. Another question, I suppose, given the focus on public space, is also the relative exclusion of attention to crimes that take place in private. And those are of quite different kinds. We've heard references to crimes which occur within the family, but also there are numerous kinds of offence, including perhaps in particular crimes of business and crimes of the state, which are designedly take place in very private places by people who have very often the social ability to exclude themselves from other forms of supervision or oversight, regulation, etc. Nobody really knows, if you like, what proportion of crime those kinds of events constitute. So by extension, we can't really know what proportion of crime is being prevented.
So CCTV is just directed at a small amount and a particular sort of crime. It's not really addressing itself to the broader range of the crime problem.
But which is not to say that those crimes are in any sense unimportant, and they may often be the kinds of crimes which impact fairly directly on people's sense of well-being in using those public spaces. I mean, one of the more interesting points I think we've heard is that the sense of being under proper supervision can in fact extend people's ability to use public space. In that sense, positively enhance liberty by enabling people who might otherwise have felt excluded from doing so from being in public.
There is a price to be paid, though, for that freedom to walk down a street. OK, a camera's watching you, you feel safer. We can talk about whether that degree of safety or degree of fear is actually rational or not, just because a camera is sitting there. But the one issue that does concern me, and it's obviously a key theme of Andrew Pudafat's analysis, is what does this mean in broader terms? If we have cameras on every street corner, we have cameras outside our homes, maybe one day we'll have cameras inside our homes. Who's actually watching the video screen? Is it just an example of us becoming a lot more tightly controlled and regulated? In Foucault's sense, are we becoming a carceral society?
I think it might be important to distinguish between being watched and being controlled, however. If we think back to the kinds of things that Foucault was saying about the panoptic prison or the asylum or the factory, he was also talking about ways in which those institutions served minutely to regulate people's behaviour on a continual basis, with the intention, as it were, of reconstructing their whole being or consciousness. You could argue that some CCTV-type technologies are actually very behavioural. All they're really concerned with is what we overtly do. They don't address themselves to the minutiae of our behaviour at all. And that's not to say they're either good or bad, but it is to say I think there's an historical difference between the ambitions of what was at stake. And maybe for the watchers today, it is simply enough that we behave ourselves within certain parameters. They don't necessarily need to kind of feel a sense of control over our very beings as well. Perhaps that's all they require.
So CCTV for you doesn't conjure up an image of some 1984 nightmare land, or it needn't necessarily.
Not necessarily, but I think we have to be rather more careful than talking in kind of paranoid terms about nightmares and dystopias. It's, in a way, it's too important for that. What we have to recognise is that there is, you know, a really quite major historical development taking place, and we have to make some fairly basic political decisions, I suppose, about how as a society we wish to respond to those developments. These technologies are not going to be disinvented. It tends to follow that we have to determine how and within what limits we want them used and who benefits. And those are very much questions which bring them within the ambit of things that need to be decided at a collective and political level. They're not, as it were, simply marginal adjuncts to social life which are peripheral. I think they can reconstruct social life in a fairly fundamental way.
So isn't it then the case then that the issue of crime is being used as the way in which these new technologies can be more and more brought into our everyday lives so that we accept them because we're led to believe that they're useful in reducing crime?
I think it's certainly true that developments which initially appear rather untoward and scary quite rapidly become normalised. You think how quickly we've all become habituated to the idea of cameras on motorways, for instance, which only a few years ago were unheard of. Now, as it happens, I think that some such uses of these technologies are fairly uncontroversial, and it's quite hard to find people who can produce a principled argument against the use of cameras on motorways, for example. But we need to take care, I think, how much we allow ourselves to buy lock, stock and barrel the full implications of a technology because we happen to find some of its uses convenient. And certainly not just in the case of CCTV, but other forms of electronic monitoring, the encoding of smart identification cards, and so on and so forth, that these things have many uses. Some of them have become, if you like, the conditions of access to goods and services and practices from which many of us derive considerable financial, personal and leisure benefits, but that we allow ourselves to become unconscious of what's implied in their use, somewhat at our peril, arguably. I guess like any powerful tool, surveillance technologies are ambiguous in their effects, and some of those effects are unforeseen and unintended. And that's why we need to encourage a fairly careful, active, participative public conversation about what we do and don't want to happen using them. I mean, we may forget, for example, that policing itself as an activity was once highly controversial, and yet it has become so much part of the fabric of our everyday life that it no longer seems so to us. And maybe we're on the verge of a similar kind of transformation.
Maybe you are correct in seeing the end of the 20th century as marking a moment of transformation. In future years, we'll talk about it in the same degree we talked about that moment of transformation at the end of the 18th century, which saw the birth of the prison. For now, Richard, thanks a lot.